what do you make of thought number two of Elliot Friedman's 31 thoughts this week? Because obviously the 11 times seven and the fact that Marner seems hesitant to go there is blowing up on Twitter and has some Leafs fans in a lather.
Yeah, they do. Because actually just a couple minutes ago, I had a couple of my Leaf fan buddies texting me over this. It's constant. Everywhere you go, that's all people want to talk about is Mitch Marner and the stalemate. It's frustrating. I get the fans' frustration because I feel like Kyle Dubas admitted publicly that he was a little lax with William Nylander and kind of just assumed things would sort themselves out. But the sense is he hasn't been with Marner. He's been very active this summer. And I thought it was very telling that he brought up that he first met with Darren Ferris way back at the 18 combine. And he said he was actually the first agent that he met with when he got the job before Matthew's agent and before Nylander's agent. So this has been a priority for the Leafs for a while, and you can sense the fatigue on management side and with the fan base. You know, seven times 11, that seems like a pretty fair deal, especially for a winger. I mean, that would just to say no to that, if that's in fact true, makes you wonder where Marner's camp is going with this and if they might be overplaying their hand.
If the Leafs don't offer Marner the Matthews money, does he sign? Yes or no?
I think he does. I think at some point players want to play hockey. And unlike the Nylander situation of a year ago, once the season starts, they don't have the cap room to make this guy whole, like to give him extra. And just because of the cap restraints, barring a trade, it just becomes more complicated. It was easier for Nylander to push it because there was some wiggle room with the cap. But if Marner pushes this into the season, then it gets pretty difficult. So the sense is they're still far apart, and maybe the Leafs call his bluff, and maybe Marner has to come down and sign something. Because I can't see the kid not playing hockey. I think it would kill him. I think it's tougher on... I mean, you guys would know. I would imagine it's really tough for a player to want money so badly that they're willing to risk sitting out a season. That seems very aggressive.
There's been a little bit of talk about offer sheets into the season or after training camp. What do you think the odds are of that happening with Marner?
Slim to none. I just think there's only so many teams that even have the cap room to do one. And if you look at the history, most offer sheets come, you know, the way Aho's did, right on July 1 or in the first couple weeks of July. At this point, teams are trying to figure out the fringes of their lineup. You know, you have other teams that are worried, a collection of teams worried about signing their own RFAs. So I just don't see that many candidates to offer them an offer sheet. And I feel like if, you know, they've already kicked around and explored that, if it was going to happen, I think it would have happened by now. You know, teams need to start being worried about being cap compliant. So to go out and get a superstar like Marner, and, you know, teams just don't have $11 million, $10 million kicking around that they can do that. And some of the teams that do, like Colorado, they have their own guys to worry about. So I really see that as a long shot because it hasn't happened yet.
With Luke Fox, NHL writer for Sportsnet, Sportsnet Today, MacArthur, Zygmantas, Ward, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Luke, I know that time will pass here and that things change over 3, 4, 5 years. But it strikes me that Austin Matthews got what he wanted. John Tavares obviously got what he wanted. He came here as a UFA. William Nylander got what he wanted. I don't think Mitch Marner is the guy an example should be made out of. I think Mitch Marner should get paid what he deserves to get paid, and I wonder if there can be an irreparable rift that is created through this process if Mitch, doesn't matter what anybody else thinks, it doesn't matter what you think, I think, anybody else thinks, if Mitch perceives he is the one out of that group and the sole one out of that group that has been made an example of or has taken less than what he is worth when he thinks all of his other teammates got what was due. I just wonder if that's a potential risk here, an irreparable rift of some kind.
I think there's potential, yes. I mean, I think there's an element of that already. I think he feels there's some, there's some ego involved. There's some pride involved. This is a guy who's been the team's leading scorer the last 2 years. This is a guy who's stayed healthy. This is a guy who put his hand up and said, I want to kill penalties as well, and then showed that he could do that pretty well. You know, he was on the shutdown line with Tavares, against, matched up against Boston's, you know, incredible top trio there. This is a dynamic player, and then he's already took a bit less because he didn't get his signing bonuses. And I think, you know, that might seem petty to us outsiders, especially, you know, when you consider the tax bracket these guys are in. But I think there's definitely an element of that, of feeling slighted, of feeling like I'm right there with Matthews. You know, they don't have the rings, but I think there's a feeling of I'm Kane and he's Tate. You know, I want to be treated equally. I want exactly the same. That's the sense that's out there. And then if these numbers are true, if you're turning down 7 times 11, you know, that lines up with that. That lines up because it's slightly less than Matthews. It does have the potential to be dangerous long-term because these prolonged standoffs can have a trickle effect historically. You know, PK Subban and the Canadiens, before he was traded, they had a really tough negotiation when he was an RFA. Same with Ryan Johansson in Columbus, and then he ended up in Nashville. You know, like, it might not happen right away, but sometimes this can leave a bad taste. That said, if they get things sorted out in the next couple of weeks, I think fans will have a really short memory. And, you know, if he's there opening night, I think all could be forgiven.
I think fans are going to have a short memory regardless of when. If he comes back at any point, obviously when he's in the lineup, it's a whole different ballgame. Like, Luke, what would you do? In his situation, you said the offer is there right now. What would you do now? Would you hold out longer or accept?
I think if I was him, I would try and do a bridge.
Yeah.
Just because I see the cap really going up in the next couple years with, you know, you got the U.S. TV rights money kicking in, you got Seattle kicking in. We don't know, but we assume that, you know, the NHL opening itself up to gambling will provide an influx of money. You don't want to, I just don't want to see this go down the Nylander path. Yeah. This is a real Stanley Cup contender. I mean, we should be talking about how Tyson Barry is, you know, reformed this defense. They have one of the best goalies in the league. You know, getting Marner settled, getting rid of the distraction, having him play and be in game shape for what could be a really legitimate Stanley Cup run run to the playoffs, I think is important. So take a bridge. Hopefully maybe they can find some common ground there and wait for the cap to go up. I mean, this guy's going to get his money eventually. He also, you know, the thing is, there's no sense that he doesn't want to be in Toronto. Why wouldn't you want to play on John Tavares' wing? Like, it's the perfect situation for a winger. And this team has a legitimate shot. So get playing hockey and then cash in later.
I mean, I you know what? It's such a tough situation, obviously. You know, I just feel like he's kind of made out looking like the bad guy, obviously. And a guy like that and what he does on the ice and what he knows he's capable of doing, it's just, to me, it would be hard to just settle knowing that what you do brings your team to the next level. I mean, obviously, yes, they're a Stanley Cup contender. They're very close. You know, what he brings to the table on all facets of the ice, you know, special teams and five-on-five play is, and after he saw what happened to Nylander's situation, it would just be hard for me to sit back and be like,
And Luke, and I think to Joel's point is if Mitch, and Mitch would know the situation, if Mitch perceives that William sat, and the number kept going up, that may be a game he's willing to play.
The trick there, though, is
I know the cap
year,
stuff.
The Leafs had cap.
Yeah.
They could, like, in theory, they could let it go up because they actually don't have the space if this goes to December 1.
So the Clarkson stuff and all that is irrelevant in this scenario, the acquisition of that contract and the LTIR provisions for Horton and Clarkson?
I feel like that's a very minor thing. What okay. that does is, you know, the Leafs will, you know, use some LTIR with Horton and Clarkson, because if they're going to use $1 of LTIR, you might as well use millions of it. Like, once you use it, so that allows them to sign Mitch. But I don't think that. I think that we can't make too big of a deal of that. I think that the crux of the issue is the Leafs are trying to use league comparables for star wingers coming out of their entry level deal, and the Marekamp, it appears, is using internal comparables, meaning he wants to be in the same ballpark as Tavares and Matthews.
If you look around the league now with all the RFAs, there's almost 20 of them right now. Which team do you think is going to struggle the most with who they have not starting the season?
I would say the Winnipeg Jets, because they have two of them, and Patrick Laine is a really intriguing case because of what he does so well, which is fill the net, and that's such a valuable thing, but the rest of his game needs to improve. You know, if he's not scoring goals, you don't always notice him. And then they have a guy that has more rounded game, but it is a little bit less dynamic in Kyle Connor. And they've already lost so many players, you know, Jacob Trouba, Tyler Myers, that team's already taken a hit. And now they have two stars still unsigned. I think Winnipeg's in a really tough bind. The other thing with Winnipeg is traditionally, I know Kevin Cheveldayoff has said it's kind of team policy that they don't give out huge signing bonuses. And we're in an era now where kids expect that. You know, you're coming out of your entry-level deal. You expect your deal to be front-loaded. You expect tons of signing bonuses. And traditionally, it's been club policy not to give those out. So I think those are two tricky situations. And, you know, the fact that Laine's even said publicly that he's not sure where he's going to be playing hockey this year. I mean, that's quite a comment. So I think they're in a tough way. And I also think, you know, right next to that, I think Calgary's in a tough way with Tkachuk, because he seems to be pushing for a 5-year deal, whereas I believe the team would much rather get some term on him. And again, they have a cap situation where they might have to make a corresponding move, trade out someone. They already tried in the Nazem Kadri deal that he nixed. So they might have to trade a Frolik or TJ Brody, someone like that, in order to get Tkachuk signed, because he's an important player, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's eventually the future captain of that team.